Okay, I am recording, so there will be evidence of this event. All right, here we go. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Big Show. I'm Jeff Gamet, filling in for Ewan Rankin, and it won't be the same because I am clearly not Ewan Rankin. And Happy New Year! This is the first show of the year. And it's an awesome panel. So I'm going to look good simply because I get to bask in the awesomeness of everyone else that's here. So I'll take it. And I'll just go around my screen. We have Ian. How are you doing, Ian?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much. Same as same old. Nice New Year, and Christmas was okay. Not the best. Obviously, the UK's been increasingly restricted, and now we're in full lockdown again. Hey!
Well, Happy New Year.
Yeah, I can see you guys. You're at the other end of a screen. That's a very pleasant thing. It does make these evening. It does make the lockdown a bit nicer when I come sit down, have a virtual pint with a few mates for a few hours. It's good.
I am totally with you. Getting to hang out with all of you every week is just an absolute treat. And hopefully Ewan will be feeling better tomorrow for the Mac show, so we can all hang out with him too. Patrice, how are you doing?
Doing good, doing good. I've basically slept the last 2 weeks or 2.5, so
That
I'm
sounds
good.
glorious.
It was. I don't know. I had plans. I had stuff I wanted to do. I did very little of it. But yeah, I just slept.
That
I
just
mean, what else can you do in 2020? Like, I mean, it's like
yeah
2021,
okay
you can do a lot.
yeah well and apparently we already are so yeah Rich, it's great to see you. How are you doing?
It's great to be back. I'm doing well, thanks. It's been a fun time off.
Awesome.
I've consumed a lot of Toblerone and loved every second of it.
As well you should. That's awesome. I cannot enjoy Toblerone because it has dairy in it. So please have my share for me.
I think I already have. I think I've already
Excellent.
had several people's shares.
Excellent. That's exactly as it should
Okay.
be.
It's no bad thing.
Yeah. And Atlee, good to see you. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Been keeping busy. Lots of stuff going on with the dogs.
So I hear. Yeah. But having happy pets is a wonderful thing.
I never realized how expensive happy could be.
Yeah, well, welcome to
Well,
2021.
I thought you had a wife.
I do have a wife.
Yeah, so.
Patrice, I see what you did there. All right. So let's hit the stories. And Ian, you actually dropped in the first story before we even started recording. So,
Yeah.
oh, and for everyone that's playing along at home, because I am not Ewan, and I basically show up and just make sure we're all here. I'm not actually popping between screens to show you the stories. So if you want to see the stories that we're talking about, you can check out the chat room, and even though I should absolutely be able to rattle this off myself, Patrice, please do it for me because I'm completely
Okay.
incapable.
I'm definitely going to show the articles as well, but you can head
Oh,
over to.
Patrice is the best ever.
Yeah, I can. We can do that. Head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat and then navigate to the. What is today? The 7th of January,
January 7th.
2021. Yep. And there you will find all the links. And as always, don't click any links that Muller Breaker has posted.
Words to live by.
Yes.
Wise words to live by.
Definitely not at work.
Yeah. Okay. So, Ian, your story headline is fa from BBC News: Facebook blocks Trump at least until transition complete. And
Yeah.
while I know this is political related, my guess is that you're looking at this more from the technology side as opposed to the politics side.
I am. I'd like to put the politics to one side, please, if we can, and just look. It's quite interesting that Facebook, Twitter, regardless of what the individual's done, they've all, and how powerful the individual is, they've completely shut him down. And that's fascinating that the those news outlets, those, all those different outlets decided at once. And from what someone was saying earlier, other people are also doing the same thing, that suddenly there's a complete sort of, it's almost like he's imploded in on himself, and everything is suddenly, they're suddenly locked. But digital, and just thinking about things like digital censorship in a wider sense, I mean, that's the thing I was thinking about, is wow, suddenly like that.
Well, I think that one
and these are all supposed to be free services that we should all be able to access, regardless of whatever we think whether we agree with whatever we think, we should all be able to have a discourse and a conversation. So
I think that's a mistake, though.
I find that's interesting.
I think that's a mistake, though, because we got to remember these are not public services. These are private companies that provide a service to the public.
Yeah, and I think
they have the right to restrict or limit anybody that performs actions they feel, and it totally based on their own logic and their own reasoning, is detrimental to the service or to the message that they want to have portrayed on their service. I mean, you gotta remember, these are private companies. You're not allowed to run into Walmart and scream whatever the hell you want, even though free speech is allowed.
You can. Well, you can, but they can. You can. They'll march you back out.
Yeah, they'll march you back out as quickly as you came in.
You're not allowed to use their property to showcase whatever you are trying to put forth. And when it comes down to Facebook, Twitter, all of these other social medias, Instagram, Snapchat, these are all private properties. Private properties that are owned by companies. We take for granted, or we assume think that these are our things, that these are our places to go, and these are our property to use. And they are not. These are owned by corporations. Mm. Are owned by corporations, like I said, it's no different than McDonald's or you know, Whole Foods or Walmart or In-N-Out or any of these places. These are private institutions that are publicly available to people that are following the rules and guidelines acceptable by those institutions.
So, Mr. Trump has found the Facebook police.
I'm not sure I agree 100% with that. I think there's a difference in reach and in importance between like a McDonald's and Facebook, for example. Like, I don't know how many McDonald's restaurants there are in the world, but there are for sure, I would say, more users on Facebook now than there are probably people that visit McDonald's.
Well, also, if you into a McDonald's and stand on the table and shout your agenda, only the people in that McDonald's are going to hear that, unless it ends up on social media. But essentially, only the people in the McDonald's hear it.
Just on social media, those things are only available in the limited scope that are shown unless people share it. So the same type of thing could apply. More people from that McDonald's could tell people from other McDonald's. But I'm not saying that McDonald's and Facebook are the same company. They are different types of companies, but they are both companies. And in as such, they have the right as a corporation.
What you're asking?
But there is a valid, I mean, from my perspective, there is a valid question to be asked, and I don't think it has been properly answered, whether something like Facebook, like Twitter, like the big social media platforms, whether they are in today's days, especially 2020 COVID, whether they are more a public service than they are a private company. I mean, despite that it's owned by a private company.
Yeah, but
they're a private company operating like they're a public service.
And exactly. Yeah,
that does become a problem, and it's just kind of happened like that. And in order to do anything about that, that feels like some sort of government intervention on some level might be necessary. Either, I mean, God forbid the idea of suggesting that the US government were to buy Twitter and make oh my it like God. That, because that's a bit socialist.
Yeah, no, and I
and the alternative would be to sort of make a government run Twitter, or at least some sort of announcement platform that a government could use.
Well, or you need a legal framework when you say. I mean, and to some extent it exists. I mean, there's was it Section 230, Article 230? I forget.
Article 230.
Yeah, which basically, I mean, it was in the 90s, I think, and it basically says that like the platforms are not responsible at all for anything that is put on there. So
that does not restrict the platforms from being able to say, we don't want you to share this information on our platform.
Correct.
Until they are governed by a body, like if you look at television or radio, those are governed by a body, the FCC, the organizations that monitor that kind of media. The big problem is that the rules that apply to there cannot apply to social media, because there is much more control over how that media is created, distributed, and managed than there is on social media. And this is another example that I bring up tons of them, but this is another example of where technology has far outstripped our laws. But right now, the only laws that do apply to these corporations is they are corporations. And as corporations, they have the right to say, I'm sorry, we don't want your business and we don't want you here. You can go now. And you have now been shut down from us. And until any other rules or laws or governing bodies have been put in place to handle that, this is the only law that applies to them.
Yeah, it's correct. But that also means that there is a discussion to be had. Like, what do we want?
I completely agree. But I think that it's important for us to understand that, because now I guarantee you there'll be a large number of people that'll be up in arms about, oh, this has been, you know, he's been had his freedom of speech. No, he hasn't. He can go out in the street corner and yell as much as he wants.
It's like a soapbox.
Crazy person.
Well, and also keep in mind in the United States that only the government can infringe on your freedom of speech.
Yeah.
A private business, a publicly traded company that says, yeah, we're done with you. You can't use our platform to spread your message anymore. That's not censorship. And that's not an infringement on freedom of speech, because that is not the government doing that.
Yeah, of course. As a private company, you kind of almost sort of mentally kind of disconnect yourself from that kind of idea that the two are the one governs the other. It doesn't. It's a private company. If they want to say this guy's pink, and they're going to maintain that this guy's pink regardless, and little green men,
which
live
some
under
of them probably have done,
yeah. And
I mean, you can create your...
their, and little green men live in a shed down the bottom of the garden. Yeah. They're entitled to believe that and to promote that particular.
Yeah, and you can create your own company and spread that message. Like,
yeah, and that's
this guy's pink. Look,
that's why we have new social platforms popping up all the time, and some of them stick around for a little while, but typically not, because they just can't gain traction against Facebook and Twitter. I mean, like one of the most recent examples, Parler. And I expect it will stick around for a little while and then fade away, because it won't be able to get the traction that Twitter and Facebook have.
Well, I think it has not been more geared towards that one specific part of the society that doesn't really get accepted as well by Facebook and Twitter. So in that, it may stick together. It may have enough traction to be able to hold in that niche.
Maybe.
That is ultimately the problem, that platforms like Twitter and Facebook serve the mainstream. They have content on that most people are happy with. And these alternate platforms are set up for people specifically banned and not up for that. So most people don't want to join them.
Yep.
Which to some extent might be fine. I mean, if you have look at Discord, for example, it's definitely a niche system.
Yeah.
It serves a lot of niches, but it's fine, because all those niches, like, they didn't want to be on Facebook or whatever. They wanted to be in their own little area, and that's totally okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The problem comes up when like a platform like Discord starts thinks it can compete against Facebook and can gobble up everybody, because that doesn't work, because that's not what they're good at.
Mm.
Right. Yeah. And
but it's like, it's like the bulletin boards or the forms or whatever of like back in the day. A million little niches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Discord gets that. And they're, at least I think they do. And I think that they're doing a really smart job of addressing online communication without having to compete directly with Twitter and Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now my question is, do the social platforms need to have a standardized threshold for that breakpoint where they say, okay, this far, no farther for the type of content someone puts up? And just to vaguely address what's been going on here in the United States, at what point, I guess it's not, I'm not being vague. At what point during a coup do you say, okay, this person that's involved in this act, do they need to be shut down?
And I think that's the thing Facebook has been struggling with. Because I mean, they've tried and mostly failed, or I mean, even with like in quotes, simple things as like child pornography, for example, they've tried and they've failed like a million times over because they couldn't find a good way to police that much content and not catch like a lot of other things.
Then you have the people. Oh, go ahead, Rich. Go ahead.
The person involved in this specific case has probably given them quite a difficult time as well. I mean, if I'd been saying the stuff that this guy says, I'd have been banned 4 years ago from all of these platforms, and no one would have batted an eyelid at all. Yeah. It's purely because of who he is. And I think we've just reached that point where they've decided you ain't that guy no more.
Yeah. There's a point at which you can, we'll stretch our rules to kind of allow you to think, and yet now we've had enough. It's,
yeah, but that also goes both ways. I mean, like anybody who's in the public eye, you can say a lot of things about them, like especially under the disguise of satire or like comedy or whatever. You can do and say a lot of things about them without them being able to do anything. Like ask any like A to Z level celebrity, they will tell you that. There are limits, but there's a lot of things that they have to accept that people say and people do that they can't do anything without. So it goes both ways. And it's, as you said, it's very difficult for a platform to decide like what's that limit? Where is the line?
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a public interest for them being there. Plus, I mean, they also get a lot of users because of it, because all their followers like go to those platforms to see what those people are saying. It's like,
yep. Kind of difficult. And of course, these platforms don't want to lose money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the words of, I mean, Zuckerberg's work was really interesting, as to use his platform to condone rather than condemn was kind of, I think, where the point, where the, that straw was finally broken for Facebook and how they were able to handle things.
I would say that was more his excuse, because he's been doing that for a couple of years. So
I'm with you on that one.
We just believe in the public as the right to broadest possible access to political speech and controversial speech, but fundamentally different. Yeah, which I tend to think Zuckerberg's slightly weird, but today I'm kind of with him. I agree. I think that's a good. I do think it's a good move. I find it interesting I do find it very interesting from the whole other sort of legality and other things standpoint. It's fascinating. Sort of, can we do that really? Oh yeah, we can. Okay. that is just that whole kind of conversation. It's fascinating, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And that's where I want to be, rather than the politics of the thing.
Yeah. And I mean, anybody who has run any kind of group of some sort, like Slack room, forum, Discord server, whatever, will eventually run into that problem. Like the more popular it gets, the bigger the group is, you will run into that problem. Like, what do you accept and what do you, like, where's the line? And it is not an easy decision. It's not black and white. It's a lot of gray. Mm.
Yeah.
Sorry, Rich. I...
Sorry, no, it's okay. I wonder if how independently of each other they all make the decision, because once one of them goes, all the other companies suddenly start following. Mm-hmm. And the same thing happened when Alex Jones was banned from everything. And it happened in a day. One company announced it in the mm-hmm. morning, and by the afternoon, everyone had gone. And I do wonder, you know, has a Twitter calling Facebook and saying, oh, are we doing it today? You know,
I mean, you wonder. I mean, it could be like, as Jeff says, there is an unwritten code of ethics going on between most of the CEOs or the decision makers at each of those platforms, and all going looking around together. Yeah, come on, we now have to as a community go no.
I have a hypothesis on how this played out yesterday, and. And so Twitter was the first to take action. And I think it started with all the platforms, all the CEOs sitting around saying, something's got to be done, but I don't want to be the first to jump into this one. And then mm-hmm. finally, someone on Twitter's legal team said, look, Jack, we have got to do something now, because we have reached, in our opinion, a point where we have some level of liability in what's going on. And then they're like, okay, fine, we're just going to do it. And so then Twitter does it, and everyone else is like, okay, the door's open. Now yeah. let's figure out how we're going to say why we're doing this too. And then it's just like dominoes falling. Every other mm-hmm. platform just started doing the same.
Yeah, I think so too.
I don't think it was altruistic at all.
No, there's probably also a little bit of like a marketing legal part. Like once one company does it, it automatically starts to look bad for the others. Because like if Twitter does it and then nobody else does, then it's like, I mean, why is Facebook still accepting this? Like there's immediately a bad press. All over the place.
What a weird place to be as a company, where you're really concerned about taking that action. Mm-hmm. But once someone takes the action, now you're really concerned about what happens if you don't take the action.
Yeah. It's kind of what problem with marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay. How about if we move on to a more happy and uplifting story, which I suppose isn't saying much. Atlee, your story is next, and this is from Windows Central. WhatsApp now requires you to share data with Facebook. Here's what you need to know. Great. So what's up with this?
So it looks like now, Facebook bought WhatsApp, and WhatsApp users have always been long worried that Facebook is going to, you know, try and really sink their hooks into the user base, because why else would they buy it? And here we go.
the funny thing is they promised that they would not do this.
Exactly. This is something they promised they wouldn't do like last year. They even re-promised it last year. Mm-hmm. And now they are doing it. So again, it is sort of... I figured that it was also timely with the other conversation we were having on social medias and things like that. And it also goes into the, here's another opportunity for another social media to come and take hold. Because I know, I basically 2/3 of the people I know that use WhatsApp will leave WhatsApp for this. They and will go to-
Where are they going to go? Signal?
No, the Signal, WeChat, somewhere else, right? They will go to some other platform, or if another platform is able to present itself, it's just a very good time to do it. Mm-hmm. Because end-to-end encrypted messages back and forth that are not being harvested by Zuckerberg or one of the others, right, is a very, very appealing thing to a lot of people right now. And I think we're all getting a little sick and tired of every single thing we do being, you know, owned by one of three or four people in the world.
And, you know, when Facebook bought WhatsApp, my assumption was eventually we would be having the conversation we're having right now. And well, then
there was a fight to not allow them to have WhatsApp because of this. And they promised all along, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. They got the go ahead to buy another messaging tool. They bought WhatsApp, and here we are a few years later. And they're doing mm-hmm.
things. Yeah. Well, you know, when the WhatsApp founders left, was that last year also?
It was the end of last year, yeah. It was, mm-hmm. I think, October, November, was it? Or was it earlier?
I think it's hard to tell. Time has become this ephemeral blur for
me. It was March 2020.
Okay, so March 2020, the WhatsApp founders were gone. And yeah. And that was the point where I was absolutely certain that this conversation would happen. And it was no longer a matter of if down the road. It changed to how soon would we be having a conversation. And apparently the answer is January 2021.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is, and that's something I've never understood with Facebook. They don't seem to care. Like all the scrutiny that they're under, and they're definitely the company that has the most scrutiny right now. Mm-hmm. And like all the talks about like maybe splitting up Facebook and maybe WhatsApp and Instagram should be separate and all of that. And they're doing something that is so obvious, like not the intention of anybody else.
I look at it one of two ways. I look at it that this is either going to be the thing that's going to incite the further discussions on breaking up Facebook, or somehow they know that it's coming no matter what they do. And mm-hmm. they're trying to harvest as much information as they can while they still have hold of these users before they have to do the complete separation of these two entities.
Mm-hmm. You don't think they're going to shoot it into Messenger to replace Messenger?
They what?
Or will they then kind of, now they're starting to integrate the platform more into the rest of Facebook as a bigger piece, are they then going to suck the WhatsApp then become a replacement for Messenger?
I don't know that, because this is the same thing they just did like 6 months ago with Instagram as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. it looked like they knew this was coming, and they're trying to harvest as much information, as much data as they can in the final days that they have it all.
You know,
get away with this.
Tether data.
No, look at all the other stuff that's going on right now. And we've just had the whole story about how great and moral Facebook actually are, because they've just banned the inciting hatred and violence guy. And then this comes out and no one's going to notice. And by the time all of that other stuff settles down, we've forgotten about this. We'll move on to something else. This might come back up in another, if they do something else in another year or two, and something, and they push too fast, then this might be brought up as and another thing. You did that, but no one's going to notice because like,
well
all
spotted.
This stuff that's going well
spotted. I think you
good news
it.
On the right, bad news on the left. A little bit further to the back where people can't yeah. see it.
Exactly.
It's a lovely bit of marketing that's been known since the Roman times. It's called bread and circuses.
Mm-hmm.
You keep them all. You give them all the things that makes them happy at the front, and you do the strange stuff at the back, and no one notices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rich, I think you nailed it. It comes down to Facebook is doing this because they know they can. Yes. Even though they said we're not going to, they can do it, so they are.
Exactly. I mean, as again, like in the with the last story, if you don't like it, what Facebook and Twitter and everybody do, you can go and join another platform.
Yeah.
And that just brings with it all those, they're just immune to everything.
Now, I find it interesting that every time one of the communication platforms does something where people are suddenly freaking out because OMG, my privacy, there's this flurry around everyone go to Signal. And then it dies down a little while later,
mm-hmm.
and Signal hasn't exploded into the massive thing that overtakes all the other private communication platforms. Yeah. And I'm not saying that as a negative thing towards Signal, because
it's not their fault.
They're not able to hold the momentum.
Yeah, it's, I just find it fascinating that it's this cycle. Oh, everyone go to Signal, but all these other platforms have all this momentum and people don't leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess my privacy is just as ephemeral as my time.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, next story. This one is from you, Patrice.
Yeah. It's kind of keeping with a theme, kind of.
Another thing you could, with a massive outage.
Yeah, exactly. Like another, I'm not sure you could call Slack a social network, but it's definitely an online company, like an online communication company of some sort. More business focused for most people, at least. They started the first workday of 2021 with a massive outage worldwide.
I found that
so not a good start.
Oopsie.
Not a good start. It was down, I think, it started like 10 a.m. Eastern, at least according to the article. So it was like later in the day for us. And it took quite a while for everything to settle. They reported some issues down the line, but the communication, to be honest, was pretty bad from what I saw. It kind of, nobody knew what was going on. It just stopped working. They fixed it, but I think it showed a lot of people how much they rely on, especially for business, how much they rely on certain tools. Because Slack is probably the business chat communication tool worldwide right now. I mean, there's Zoom, there's Slack, and then maybe Teams. And
that's Teams, because everybody gets it. It's free.
Yeah.
You get it by your Microsoft sub. You get it by Microsoft sub. So lots of people are using Teams now.
Yeah. So as I said, it's probably the big three right now, especially in the whole pandemic thing. So yeah, it's just showing how much we rely on it and how bad it is when something like this goes down. I mean, I know entire like newsrooms for like big publications that rely on this to coordinate their like news and everything. And yeah, if you can't talk with your entire company, that is pretty bad. And I mean, there's Slack for business. Like they're really big business. I mean, wasn't Slack just bought by someone? I seem to remember, was it Salesforce?
It was Salesforce, $28 billion.
Yes, yeah. You're right.
and they're just rolling it out to IBM right now, as far as I remember. So,
well, not on Monday they weren't.
No.
Oh dear.
Yeah. So I mean, to over 100 million, I think, was it 100 million employees or 100,000? I don't know, probably 100,000, 100 million, 100,000 employees.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Facebook bought WhatsApp for $1 billion and everyone was shocked and there was all that news? Oh, he didn't even ask. He just spent $1 billion without asking anyone and we're all amazed. And then a couple of years later, just Slack, 28 billion. Fine.
Was it Instagram that was $1 billion and WhatsApp was like 7 point something?
They were both a lot of money.
Yeah, I think things are measured in Instagrams now, so that's why.
Yeah.
19 billion.
19. Oh yeah, right. That was the crazy acquisition.
I just googled it. 19 billion.
Yeah, that was the crazy acquisition where nobody knew why my Facebook even paid that much.
Yeah. Well, now we know.
So I do have a bit of a story. I've not put it in the chat room because I can't get in the chat room.
That's okay. I just dropped your story into the chat room for everyone.
Smashing, because I still can't work IRC. I don't know.
It's okay, Rich. We've got your back.
Internet for 25 years. I don't know why I can't work IRC yet, but
and we've got your back. It's all good.
Anyway, once upon a time, Microsoft wanted to make a games console and weren't entirely sure about how to go about doing this. And somebody thought, why don't we just buy Nintendo?
Well,
that's what Nintendo said.
From a business perspective, I can appreciate why Microsoft would say, well, we need to do this. Let's buy a company that already does it.
Absolutely. And so in to commemorate the Xbox coming out 20 years ago. Yeah. Bloomberg's published a history about the thing. This has emerged that they tried to buy Nintendo. And basically the response was sort of an hour of people laughing at them from Nintendo. But it looks like they were trying to make what they were trying to do made some sort of sense from Microsoft's point of view, where they were proposing that, hey, Nintendo, you're really good at making software. We'll make a console for your software. And they didn't really go for that, which I don't blame them, because working with Sony was what ended up with the PlayStation coming into existence and Nintendo being left out in the cold. So it's just a little tidbit from console history that perhaps once it did nearly happen, could it have happened? Could Microsoft have bought Nintendo, and what kind of terrible world would we be living in? Would it have gone bad?
Yes.
I don't know. I'm glad they didn't, and I'm glad Microsoft also do games now.
Yeah, I'm glad that we have the Xbox because it's cool. But at the same time, I still have that little bit of resentment because Microsoft really took off in the gaming space because they bought Bungie. And they bought Bungie right after Bungie at Macworld Expo said, look at this amazing game we're making. And it was Halo. And it was coming out for the Mac, and it would have been a game that could have changed the landscape for Macs as gaming PCs. And what ended up happening was Microsoft buys Bungie and kills the Mac version of Halo. Mm. And then we have the Xbox. And so we have a really cool gaming platform at Xbox, but at the same time, I really wish we could have had Halo on the Mac.
I still don't think Apple like games much. You know,
I think Apple likes games. They just haven't been able to wrap their heads around how to properly approach this.
Mm. They're doing better now than ever, I think, with all the iOS stuff. But when was it? When probably Steve Jobs brought...
They don't really like to play games, just like they don't like to swipe or touch the screens on their computers.
There was a year Steve Jobs brought, I think, the guy from EA out on stage, and they did a whole presentation, and EA was like, all of our games are going to come to Mac the same day as PC and everything else. And they, not one ever did.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It was so bizarre.
It's one of those things with Apple. I've always thought that particularly now with, they have two amazingly powerful platforms to play games on, the iPad and the iPhone. Why would they bother putting the effort into making their creative platform play games when it's their creative platform? The iMac and the thing is their business tool set. That has a job to do, and it's very much a job to do. There it sits. We've got a whole developer space that's bringing us wonderful little games and these incredibly powerful little boxes that people will carry everywhere. Why we'll just carry on with that? Because it makes more sense. I kind of see that. I can see the lot. Completely see the logic in it, and I can see why that every Mac user I know owns a desktop PC they play games on, because it's just not worth the bother.
Patrice, I want to hear what you have to say, because I have a feeling it's what I'm thinking.
No, Apple has done quite a lot on the platform to make games fly. There are like a million reasons. I mean, this is probably the wrong show for that. That's probably more a Mac show topic. There's a million reasons why it didn't happen. But like Metal especially, like a lot of people that I know that are in the game space, they really like Metal because it is really, really, really good. It's just the market for it is so small now. I mean, other than like iOS, like they will do Metal for iOS, and that's a pretty big Mac market and a pretty successful market. But the Mac market is just so small compared to everything else that it's like the effort that they have to put in to make it a good app or a good game on the platform, because there is customization that they have to do for the platform. It's just not worth it. It's a purely business thing. And there are good games on the Mac. There are good indie games on the Mac. It's not that everything sucks. It's just the big platforms, the big known, like what you mentioned, like Halo, Fortnite, all of that.
Well, they're not going to do all that extra work for what, seven or eight of the market.
Which is what, exactly. Yeah. It's too late. That train left the station a long time ago, unfortunately. Yeah. It doesn't mean that it can't happen, but something really important would need to shift for that to happen.
The Mac suffers from, in my opinion, the same problem Windows Phone suffered from for developers. Why are you going to do that much work to customize something for someone, for something that you're going to, at the very max, if you get everybody, is 8% of the potential market you can get. I mean, it's just financially, it doesn't make sense. Like you said, it works for indie gamers. You got indie developers where they're like, hey, listen, I can get a bit of a captive audience and I can't compete against Blizzard and Bungie and all of these others. So I'm going to put my game on the Mac. And then they do, they get some traction, they make some money. I made a fair bit of money writing apps for the Windows Phone because I had a good portion of the marketplace and I was able to really hold my own against other companies because a lot of them just never showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of where the independent play is going to be stronger on the Mac, but the big play is not going to be there.
Yeah, I know full well this isn't a Mac show, and yet I'm continuing us down that path. This could change for Apple having the Mac as a viable gaming platform, and that's because we now have the M1 Mac. So
that's going to make
so the apps that you're making for iPhone and iPad, the games that are like crazy good sellers, they can just run on a Mac.
Eventually.
Eventually,
maybe.
Yeah, but the point is you have the same processor and it becomes a much easier process of taking this game and running it on a Mac because it's an M1 Mac. It's the same processor. It's the same hardware you have in iPhones and iPads.
I think that you're going to see that happen at the same time you see all iOS apps work on the Macs.
Yeah, when it becomes universal app.
Yeah, when you get to that, because until then, you still will have to worry about API changes, hardware changes, because the video and all of the other components will be different on a Mac than they will be on an iPad or an
iPad. No, actually, that's not true, because Apple is now able to use the same hardware across their platforms.
Yeah, same API, especially with Metal, the same APIs and so on. Like, there is still effort, but it's probably small enough that someone might just like throw like, or there might be like, I don't know, there's a big like whatever, Epic, just to pick one, or like Sony or whatever, or EA Games. They might just have like a couple developers in there that like on a Friday afternoon as a like little side project. They finish a port to the Mac and then they just release it because, well, they have it.
So you're saying that the processors that are used for video on a Mac are the exact same processors? So the exact same video cards?
API-wise, yes. With Metal especially, there's no big difference from what I understand.
API changes between the Mac OS and iOS.
So why, but that has been true for a while. The problem was the rest of the app. Like, there was so much around it that it just didn't work, especially the processor changes, but that's definitely not necessary anymore. And I mean, I don't think any of us are game developers, so it's hard to tell. I can definitely see that happening, but it's still going to be an uphill battle because I mean, there's the like console or PC gaming market. And then you have the mobile market, which is definitely smaller and has different titles.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the Mac. Like, this kind of gets smaller.
You know what they should do if they want to get into gaming is buy an already successful gaming company.
Yeah. It's like you read my mind.
Like,
from
Japan. Like,
and
how about Nintendo?
Isn't Nintendo for sale?
I don't think they're any more for sale to Apple than they will be to Microsoft.
I don't know. As far as I know, they've had like
anything.
Yeah, I think they've had a pretty like decent relationship, because I think people at Apple have been big fans of Nintendo for a long time.
Oh yeah, and they put the Nintendo mobile games on iPhone first. I don't assume they're on Android now. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
But yeah. Well, if you want to be successful in the mobile gaming space, you have to release for iPhone first, because you want to be able to recoup your investment. And so you have to put your app on the platform where people are actually paying money. And then if it's successful, then you can bring it over to Android. And if you go because the other way,
wants it.
Yeah. Well, if you go the other way where you start on Android and then say, we'll bring it to iPhone, there's a much higher likelihood that your game is going to fail.
I'm not 100% sure I agree with that, because the only iOS apps that I've ever made any money on were ones that I had a good following on Android first before I made it for iOS, because iOS's discoverability is poor.
Now, of course, exceptions to the rule. Right there.
I mean, if I have several million dollars to pay off the right people in certain places and also spend the money on marketing, yeah, sure. If I have a few million dollars in my game for marketing, then yeah, sure. I would agree with you there. But aside from that, no.
It depends.
I would go the other way.
There's no universal answer.
From Android to iOS. iOS is still almost twice as much as Android to develop a really robust, a very strong app.
Now, my perspective that I'm bringing, this comes from talking with lots of developers at CES over several years and from their experiences. So, so take that for whatever that's worth, because I'm certainly not a developer myself.
Coming back to the question, like Microsoft and Nintendo, I mean, it's a big question. Like, what would have happened? Would the fact that Microsoft was behind it have pushed Nintendo more, so they were more successful than they are now today, or would have it just failed because, well, Nintendo wasn't any good and Microsoft wasn't all in, apparently, because otherwise they would have done what they did in the end, like what they actually did. So it's hard to tell. I mean, we could have ended up in one of two places. Either we only have Sony, we only have the PlayStation, which is probably then also worse because there's no real competition for it. Always it. Or we could have ended up with, well, a strong Nintendo and a strong Sony, which would have been fine. So, yeah.
Yeah, I would like to think that this would have turned into a very successful deal. But at the same time, I look at Nokia and I think, well, this could have been the first Nokia.
It could have, yeah.
And we didn't know about Microsoft making hardware at the time. They hadn't made, they made keyboards and mice and things before the Xbox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that was what, like, they're making an actual, like, a real games console, not just stuff I plug into my other games console, but a whole thing. And so, yeah, I can't blame Nintendo for just based on that alone, not wanting to do anything with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to say for the market, it was better because we have at least three players now, probably more, but we have at least three big players. And I think it's always good.
I agree. I like having the broader selection, and more competition. That's always best for us.
Mm-hmm. And I've just realized I should have picked the story about KFC releasing a console instead. Never mind.
Oh my God, that would have been the story of the week. Yeah, that's right. And one of my favorite parts of their console is that it does have a chicken warmer in it.
Yes, it's absolute genius. Absolute genius. Well done, KFC.
Yep, well done, KFC. Okay, my story... after everyone else's story, I feel like mine is just kind of meh, just in comparison. Intel just announced that they're releasing their own version of Face ID hardware. So it's the whole system that scans your face, as opposed to just looking at essentially a 2D photograph or matching to a 2D photograph of your face, and has its own version of the secure enclave like Apple has for Face ID security. And so then this will be something that other companies can buy and incorporate into their products. The part that made me go, oh, really? When I was looking at this, because it made sense that eventually they would do something like this. Intel is pitching this as something that initially I was thinking it'd be like, oh, put this into your PC laptop or put this into your phone that uses Intel chips. They're pitching it like, hey, you can put this in your ATM or into your security lock. So mm-hmm. you're using facial recognition to authenticate for making a withdrawal at an ATM machine or for opening the door to the secure area. And they had a few other examples to go along with that. So on one hand, I look at that and think, hey, that would be really convenient to be able to authenticate for these different places where I need to have security for accessing whatever it is. But at the same time, do I really want to have ATMs storing a 3D scan of my face? And is it something that has to be stored on each device? Or is it something where they scan it and now the secure enclave is a server somewhere and all my data has to be transmitted via the internet to a centralized location? Yeah. And as soon as I started thinking about all of that, I started to not feel really good about what Intel's doing.
I mean, the problem with Intel is you never know whether it's going to be any good. I mean, or whether mm-hmm. they're going to abandon it in like a couple of years. I mean, think about the 5G modems and that whole debacle. Mm-hmm. It is an intriguing idea to have it in more places. And I mean, the question is, as you said, like the big advantage of Face ID over other systems. I mean, there are others. Like I think Samsung has, for example, one mm-hmm. That works pretty poorly, but it exists. Is that like the Apple solution is hardware integrated. There is no communication happening between like over a software layer. It's all basically secure enclave to Face ID back and forth, and the operating system only gets told works or doesn't, like unlock or don't. It's and that's the question here, like how would that work? But I could definitely see that. I mean it would probably take like 30 years to get into like the ATM business because they're really old usually. But I could definitely see something where, like, I don't know, you have a some like even maybe it's in your credit card or debit card, like the information is stored on there and it just communicates with it. Like the reader communicates with the card reader or like NFC or something, with something that you have, and the information is there. And basically authentication happens on your, like it could even be on your phone. Like it just does NFC communication with your phone and that has that information.
So the secure enclave at that point is something that you as the end user have to keep mm-hmm. with you all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's easier, more convenient to access. I mean, kind of like your phone. I mean, you still need your phone for Face ID or
if you use True. Your idea of the smart card of a smart card with your biometrics on it, whatever it is you need for that to work, then you, as long as you've got that with you, which you would anyway to get money out of the bank if you're talking about an ATM, that's I think that's okay. I mean, I'm happy with that. I'm not so keen on the idea, like Jeff originally said, of there's some Cyberdyne system somewhere in the background that's got a big database with all my biometrics on, so whenever I go to a machine, it knows it's me. Mm-hmm. I mean, the current state of affairs with everyone wearing a mask these days, the whole biometrics thing's falling down a bit anyway, because the amount of times I walk around a supermarket, look at my phone, then realize, oh, for God's sake, I wish I'd had a touch ID phone now. Yeah.
can't we just use our phones for these things anyway? I mean, I'm continually annoyed that I can't use contactless payment from my phone to get cash out of an ATM.
It's coming. Oh.
Yeah, I haven't stuck my card into an ATM for.
It's the only reason I've still got a
couple
card
years now.
Just the cash. Yeah, no, it's coming. But I mean, yeah, I mean, in theory, you should be able to use your phone. But I think the big advantage is that it can have like an extra layer of security, because like it can make sure that you're actually you, that it's not someone else who stole your phone, your card, whatever, and got the money.
You've got multi-factor authentication. Yay!
So actually, this is the kind of thing that sounds like it would be more appropriate in, say, if I was a military base rather than...
I mean, they probably already have that.
And, yeah. Places where you know, like, exactly from a list of specific people who is going to be turning up and who isn't, and that's rather than an ATM, which could be any human being on the planet.
Yeah.
Well, with an ATM, as I said, if you have either your phone or your card, and that has the biometric information on it, and you can match that and simply say, if I take your card, I can't, even if I put it into the machine, I can, and I know everything else, like your PIN or whatever. I mean, you don't need a PIN, but let's say you still have it.
Yeah.
I still can't get it because I don't have your face. So it would be a security thing.
Yeah, or it could be a way to corroborate your PIN.
Yeah, for example. Or to replace it, because PINs are not secure anyway.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's potential. I was thinking about the PC login immediately, because I think that would be the biggest benefit, but sure, why not put it other places?
Like your door lock. How well does Microsoft Hello work?
Yeah, I was just thinking of that. It works pretty well.
I've used it, and I'm genuinely asking. It works well.
It does. A colleague of mine uses it all the time and loves it to bits on his a couple of colleagues have it on their surfaces and love it to bits. It said it works brilliantly. Really impressed with it.
I have no problems with it.
I mean, I'm not trying to set it out with my webcam here, and I might do.
No, I've got it. I've got it on my surfaces as well, and it's been fantastic, and it worked really well on the phone too. The phone was fantastic. With it as well, no problem whether I have my glasses on, don't have my glasses on, have my sunglasses on. It was actually really good.
Cool.
All right.
I need a fancier webcam.
They've got a really good camera for the Microsoft Hello, the Hello enabled camera on this built into the Surface. It's quite a interesting camera.
Already shopping for webcams. Ignore me. Yes.
Good luck.
Are Hello enabled?
Oh yeah, you can't buy a webcam anymore, can you? Because
good luck, yeah.
Because yeah, plagues.
Yeah, the advice I'm giving people that are desperate for a webcam, without spending a lot of money, assuming you, I'm not sure how easy they are to get a hold of outside the United States. Wise, WYZE. They make really nice webcams that cost like $20, and they have a firmware that you can install on the cameras that turn them into just a regular webcam that you use with your computer as opposed to a security cam. And at least in the United States, I can order a Wyze cam for like $20 and have it delivered to my house in like 3 days. Throw that firmware on it and I've got an extra webcam.
Nice.
Can get them here, but they're much more expensive here. There's £55 on Amazon.
Oh yeah. I bet companies still cheaper buying than them and bringing
still
them
cheaper than
still
cheaper than the webcams.
I'm currently on a DSLR going into a gaming capture card, which is quite a convoluted but good way of doing it. I also recommend that.
That's pretty cool, actually. Yeah. Hey, this show and all of the others on British Tech Network, they are sponsored by TSO Host. And thank you to them. Without them, we wouldn't be able to bring you all of our brilliant conversations every week and enlighten you in the ways that we do. And they're giving us the hosting that we need so that we can get the shows out there to everyone. And they're just absolutely awesome. So what they're asking us to do is take to social media and let everyone know that we appreciate that TSO Host is helping us out to make all these shows possible. So thank you to TSO Host for having our back. You absolutely rock. And also Iman Max sponsors us. And we will probably have Cal from Iman Max with us on the Mac show tomorrow, which would be awesome. So if you have anything with an Apple logo, take it to them. They can fix it. And Cal has said that he's not into dealing with fabric, so HomePods are off the list. But now that we know that it's easy to get the fabric cover off of a HomePod mini, I'm feeling like he's kind of obligated to work on those too. But they will do what other places won't do, which is fix your Apple gear at the component level. So instead of taking what would otherwise be a working motherboard and just throwing it away, they will replace the capacitor or whatever it is on that board that needs to be replaced so it's working again, and it saves your gear from going into a landfill, and they don't care if it's out of warranty. That they're awesome people. So thank you to Iman Max for sponsoring us as well. And cool things. So Ian, I'll just go down the list in the way I introduced everyone. Do you have a cool thing this week?
Yeah, I think with a slightly vested interest, because I've written for them, is medium.com. The basically stories and stuff online. It's a really nice sort of service, which I've been really enjoying. I signed up for it early on in lockdown, in fact, because I kept hitting their pages, finding various things to read. And some really good, really insightful articles there. It's one of those ones where it's a $5 a month sub if you want to read more than the allocated two or three articles you can read a month. And it's been one of the better sort of cheapy $5 a month things. And there's an article I wrote about backups for them. It was one of those things you can write what you like. So you could write any topic. I thought, yeah, I might as well write something myself. So I put together an article. I whacked it on. So it's there if anyone would like to have a nosy. I'll chuck it in the Slack room at some point. And it is quite a cool thing. There's stuff not just about technology. There's articles about lifestyle. There's articles about fitness. Anything you can think of, people have written interesting stuff. Some stuff is a bit... You have to sift the wheat from the chaff. They send me a daily sort of email every day based around my choices and my interests. And generally, I find three or four articles there that are worth 5 or 10 minutes of my time, which is a great sort of thing to read. Again, a morning motion game, an alternative to a morning motion game, something for a few minutes while you sat on the loo in the morning. You can have a quick read of an insightful article for 5 minutes. Brilliant. I like it.
Awesome. Okay. Patrice. What do you have for us?
So I got something that's probably for quite a few people very topical. For me, it's more like a coincidence. I posted the link for an audiobook, but there's, I think, a paperback version or like a hardcover version as well. The book is called Intuitive Eating. It's written by two really good dietitians. So those are the medical professionals, not like nutritionists that could do whatever they want. And it's kind of like I want to almost call it an anti-dieting book, for all the people who have failed at dieting almost, or like, struggled with it. There's a lot of science behind it, and the book is really, really good in getting into that. And for me, the interesting thing is that for the first time in my life, I connected psychology and like nutrition. And that is something, it is totally obvious once you think about it and once you think deeper about it, but you don't realize it, how much that actually is influenced. And everybody has to make their own decisions. It is just a very good book. And if you take, like, if you just take the sciencey bits, because it is a really good sciencey book from it, and then do your own thing, totally fine. Everybody has to figure out their own part. But I discovered it on TikTok, actually. It's a really good book, and a lot of it makes a lot of sense. It's Intuitive Eating by Evelyn Tribol and Elise Resch.
Awesome.
And it's not a cheap book, but it's a good book.
Awesome. Okay, Rich, do you have something?
Come back to me. I can't find anything.
Okay. Atlee, you're on the spot.
Been there.
So I for the holidays, I ended up getting given this really interesting set of charging cables that have the magnetic ends that the USB-C or the iPhone, the Lightning charger, gets plugged into the phone and left there. And then this just brings up a magnetic connector that basically just allows you to connect to it quickly. That way you can just grab your phone and go. Then you're ready to go. You
don't have to be knocked off a table
by a dog and possibly wrecking your port or anything else. So I found them very, very useful and quite flexible.
That looks really nice. And really only $20 in the US.
I know. They're really and surprisingly extremely well made.
How good's the magnet? Because I had one of those years ago and I always found the magnets to not be terribly trustworthy in terms of keeping them connected. Has it got better now?
I find it a lot better. Yeah. They're using I had a similar one a long time ago. You're talking about 3 or 4 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I found that the magnets they used on those were too weak. And it was constantly disconnecting it. This one's much stronger, much more stable. And then I find it much like you can actually pick the device up by it.
Could never do that with those ones. They'd fall off.
And as soon as you actually touch the cable, the magnet would go, because I think they were super worried about having a magnet that close to the phone device. But, you know, since the new architecture of phones and everything is much less susceptible to that. And a lot of us have got, like I've got a huge magnet on the back of my phone right now for my gimbal. Mm. So,
there's one in this phone case I've got on mine here for the mount that you can buy for the car.
Or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Do these cables pass data also, or is it just power?
I haven't actually tried sending data, but I know there is a set that you can get it that does send data as well. I haven't tried it, but I will try it and let you know.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, I find them, they're really handy. I've got the cable set in a couple of places where I frequently sit down for a little while where I might want to just quickly connect for like 10 minutes of juice and then just get up and go. And I find it, like I said, especially with the dogs and their tails being perfect height for knocking things off of things. I find it really useful.
Awesome. All right. Well, you may have cost me $20. All right, Rich, do you need more time?
No, I can go. I've been playing a game this week that seemed a bit apt. It's actually an old iPad classic, but it's available on all kinds of platforms, and I've been playing it on PC. Plague Inc. is a wonderful little game that asks the question, yeah, coronavirus is great, but how would you do it? So you basically start out as a bacteria or a virus or something that causes zombies, and it's your job to infect and destroy the entire human race.
I love it.
You do this by, of course, infecting different people and scoring points that allow you to evolve your virus, add different features and that kind of thing. You kind of just want to stay really non-symptomatic so that the humans don't notice you and start trying to cure you. They just want to survive. It's really annoying. But eventually you can get to a point where you're powerful enough to just start. Let's add the coughing and the spitting and the coughing up blood and then the biting that goes along with it. And then we just keep ramping up the symptoms until the humans are all gone. And it's a fun way to spend 20 minutes, half an hour, just continually wiping out the whole human race as a little bacteria.
Nice.
Or virus or zombie plague, whatever you feel.
That's fantastic. Zombie plagues are always so much fun.
What are you playing it on your PC? Or
I'm just playing on my PC at the moment. There is an iPad. I first played it on the iPad, I think. Plague Inc.
Oh, I've heard about that.
Yeah. The kids were playing it a while ago. They really enjoyed it.
Yeah, beginning of the plague, actually.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So it's available on Android as well.
Okay. My pick this week is an app, and it's called Dash. And it has nothing to do with food delivery services. There's actually a Dash service, at least here in Colorado. This is an app that that if you're doing any developing is really handy, because it has all of these different development platform, API information, all this stuff just in the application. So you can think of it as documentation for the coding that you're doing. And then you can also store your code snippets and stuff in it. And so it becomes a much more useful tool. And it's like $20, I think, maybe $30. I can't remember, $20 or $30. And it's a really handy app. And also it is available on SetApp. So there you go.
What's showing here is €30 with the VAT. So it's probably $30.
Yeah, so it's probably $30.
Yeah.
But there we go. So really handy app if you're doing any kind of coding. All right. That's it. We have made it to the end of the show. Thank you, everyone, for putting up with me as the interim host today. Every one of you rock. And thank you to everyone that tuned in, followed along live. And then also thank you to everyone that's listening to the recording or watching the video after the fact. Once again, all of you rock. So everyone, hopefully, have an awesome new year. And Ewan, thank you for letting me host the first big show of the year, unless you don't like it, in which case, Ewan, I am so sorry for hosting the first big show of the year.
Too late now. Well.
All right. We have a show.
We have a show.
Indeed. Yay.
Okay. I will stop the recording.